We have a quorum. I'd like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. The very first item of business will be to get a motion from one of our members to approve the minutes of April 14th, 2015, if you can remember.
Mr. Chair, I'll do that.
Representative Pawlowski, thank you very much.
I trust you very much.
Yeah, okay, appreciate that. Any discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. You don't have to, I mean, everyone knows it's warm in here and we have no control over the temperature, so take your coats off, or take whatever off you can. We'd like, there's a limit.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Got that cleared up.
Right. We'd like to begin the hearing of this this session with welcoming a new member. And I think we'd like to start with introductions, maybe starting with the new member. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go around the room real quick, and you can find out who the rest of these people are.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Cheryl Uwakim. I represent Alva Hopkins and half of St. Louis Park. My husband and I have three kids, two of which are at U of M Morris, so my heart's a little bit there. We have one still in high school, and my husband's has been a high school teacher for 21 years, and I just had the pleasure this interim of working at the same high school he works at with at-risk kids and in study hall. So it was an interesting interim. And yes, our 16-year-old absolutely loved having both parents at the high school. So thank you. I look forward to serving on the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Could you pronounce your name one more time real so we make sure we get it right?
Uwakim. So just be a good Minnesotan and hit all the vowels and you'll be fine.
All right. All right. We can go around the room. Representative Bernardi, would you start? We'll just come around this way. Just who you are.
Well, hello, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm Connie Bernardi, and I represent the communities of New Brighton, Fridley, and Spring Lake Park.
Gene Pawlowski, primarily Monona County. I have Monona State University, St. Mary's University. I have Southeastern Tech, which is half in Monona and half in another community called Redmond, which is 99.
State Representative Wendrin A&TV, McLeod City County, and I do like you said, so I appreciate you all.
Representative Isaacson, Shoreview, Little Canada, Roseville, Vadnais Heights, and I teach at Minskew. Go Minskew.
Paul Rosenthal, I represent Southern Edina, Western Bloomington, and portions of Eden Prairie, Minnetonka.
Marion O'Neill, and I represent House District 29B, which is Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake, out in Wright County, and I'm the Vice Chair of Higher Ed.
Kristen Moe, I'm the committee legislator.
And I represent half of Otter Tail County. 8A is the number, if you want to remember that.
Kelly Tate, committee administrator.
Matt Gehring from Nonpartisan House Research.
Ken Savory, Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis.
Sean Williams from Nonpartisan House Research.
Josh Heinzman of District 10A. That's about a third of Crow Wing County.
I'm Drew from Burnsville.
Abigail Whalen, representing Anoka and Ramsey.
Representative Bob Barrett, representing most of Chisago County, and welcome to Representative Uwakim. I wanted to practice that.
Brian Daniels, representative of District 24B, Faribault, Moorstone, Bedford, and all the way down to Ellendale and Claremont. And welcome.
Hello, Joe McDonald. I represent Wright County, which is 41 miles west of St. Paul, in the cities of Delano, Howard Lake, Waverly, Montrose, Annandale, South Haven, and Rockford, and some of the townships.
My name is Ben Lean. I'm representing the wonderful district of 4A, which is the city of Moorhead and Oakport Township.
Kim Norton, I represent half the northeast and northwest half of Rochester.
Okay. Miss anybody? I guess not. If we had more time, we would have probably had all of you add what you did last summer just to make it interesting, but we do have a limited amount of time today, so we'll save that for another day. We have one bill we'd like to take care of today and hear Representative Barrett present House File. I'm Bennett. I'm sorry.
Good.
I'm sorry.
B is.
All right. That's how we kind of make sure everybody's awake. I'm Ed Bennett. So I'd like to move House File 2568. Representative Bennett, welcome to our committee. I think it's the heat that's kind of working on us here.
Thank you. It must be, Mr. Chair, the heat. Representative Barrett asked me if I brought treats today, so I thought maybe you were going to announce that, but I didn't because I did present to this committee last year. So, but I would be glad to bring them another time if you'd like. My name is Peggy Bennett, representative for 27A, which is southern Minnesota, Albert Lea area and surrounding communities. I am very excited to bring House File 2586 to you. I'm a newly retired teacher. I taught mostly first grade for about 33 years, so on the entire other end of what you represent as a committee here, but I look at our job as educators along the continuum, so I'm happy to present this bill here, and thank you for hearing it. I'll start out by just giving you a quick summary of the bill, and then I'm going to go into a few details, and then I'll be glad to answer questions that anybody has. But House File 2586 would have MNSCU and the Department of Education collaborate to identify guideline scores for on the state's reading and math high school MCA exams, and these would help determine a student's readiness for post-secondary option. I'm excited because this bill or this aspect would give community or families and students and teachers more and earlier options to help kids along that path that they choose in their education on what post-secondary path that they would choose so that they're well prepared. A couple points. Students will still have the option, obviously, to take the ACT at grades 11 and 12. This bill will simply complement the ACTs and allow students and families to have two helpful sources of information. We have a significant number of graduates, as you all know, who graduate from our high schools and then have to take remedial courses when they get to college. Many times they're surprised about that. Giving students and families another tool to help know, you know, what they're in for and help prepare them, I think is very important. And especially considering that the percentages of low-income students and students of color being required to take remedial courses is actually increasing. So what is House File 2586? On page 3 of the bill, you can see we ask MNSCU to work with the Department of Education to identify scores on the high school MCA exams that indicate students are ready to enter either a 2- or 4-year program. I want to point out these scores are informational only, and they are not meant to be cut scores at all, just to provide information to help guide students, families, and educators in planning for post-secondary education. On page 6 of the bill, we're following what was done last year in the higher education bill for the ACTs by stating that students who meet or exceed the MCA scores identified by MNSCU don't need to take a remedial course in that same subject. This becomes effective for the 2018-19 school year. Now, as an elementary educator, I'm pretty familiar with the MCAs. As a first grade teacher, my job was to look forward and help prepare students to take their test beginning in third grade. Those in the high school are very familiar with it, but I don't know everybody's familiarity with that test, so I would just like to add a few comments about, are the MCAs capable of providing this kind of information for college and career readiness? So first of all, if you remember back when our state academic standards were developed, they were developed to align with college readiness. Therefore, the assessments, that's the MCAs, demonstrating the attainment of those standards would be indicative of college readiness. Commissioner Caselius also stated that the MCAs measure college and career readiness, and she is actually recommending this year that MNSCU be required and the U of M strongly encouraged to accept the MCAs for admissions. In studying our own data,
that the Office of Higher Education received in the Getting Prepared report, you can see there is high correlation between the MCA scores and college readiness. For example, of the 90% of students that met math standards in the grade 11 that went on to secondary, post-secondary school, only 10% of those students required remediation. Conversely, of the 67% that did not meet the state math standards and the 11th grade MCAs, of those 67%, almost half of them required remediation. And the reading scores, I can give you details on all those if you want, but I'll pass on those for now and if you have questions later, but the reading scores also show that same type of correlation. In addition, I really believe that the strength that MCAs have, not only to be able to be predictive of college readiness, but they have an advantage of being given much earlier than the ACTs. ACTs are 11th and 12th grade. The MCAs start in 3rd grade. That's huge for students who are off track, which could be identified even as early as 3rd grade, and most 3rd graders probably aren't thinking about college then. They're more thinking about the next video game they want to play or something. But as students start focusing on what they want to do after they graduate, we want them to be prepared, and part of being prepared is to know earlier if you're on track or not. That gives us more of an opportunity to remediate those students. Another advantage of the MCAs, they're recently being transitioned to being online, so that information is going to be immediately available the day the students take that test. And then also, that test is also being modified to include off-grade material, which will allow even more information for the students who take that test. So to me, this gives hope to students that are younger, even in eighth grade when they take those tests, and they see that, yep, I'm really ready, I can go to that school that I want to, or I could even take some college in the high school classrooms, or, I need some more work in math or reading, but at least I have many more years to get ready for that, whereas it's hard for students and families when they find out in 11th or 12th grade that they're not ready for the type of post-secondary work that they'd like to do. So I'm excited to give families and students more information and teachers so that we can work with them and get them better prepared. I believe that we need to concentrate on creating a more seamless connection between K-12 and post-secondary. And this is one way to do it, is to utilize the MCAs to show students if they're prepared or not. I'd also like to mention that this data for the MCAs is already available on the statewide longitudinal education data system. I guess it's called SLEDS. That's new to me. Again, remember, I was a first grade teacher. I didn't deal with that. That information is already ready. We're just asking that MNSCU would fine-tune that information that's there, not create a whole new research project here, and give their opinions on the readiness of students for compared to what their scores are for 2 or 4-year programs. So I'd like to see students and families empowered here and get an earlier start at being able to be on track and knowing what they want to do, where they want to go after they graduate from high school. And I really think this bill will help them do that. So I'm open for questions, and I also understand that there's some other testifiers.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Representative. Representative Isaacson has a question.
Thank you. Representative Bennett, I see the use of the word cut scores and then where it's not cut scores. And I'm just trying to make sure you're saying there's no cut scores involved?
That word is not in the bill, cut scores.
Okay.
This is guideline scores.
Guideline scores.
That is very purposeful. I wanted to mention that because some people, when they look at something like this, to their mind comes cut scores. We're going to restrict students from choosing the path they want to do. I in no way want this bill to do that, and that's why I made sure that it said guideline scores in there to make it very clear. These are guidelines.
Representative Isaacson?
Yes, could you define what you mean by guideline scores then? Just so
sure.
I'm not sure.
Just more informative. So, for example, if a student wants to go to a 4-year college and they take the MCAs and they get a particular score, this score would inform them, am I going to need more remedial work before I go on to school? Am I going to need remedial work when I get to that college? Or I am fully prepared. It's simply information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be any push beyond that, asking if a student, in one sense, doesn't is asked to take remedial, but their score, guideline score, might indicate they shouldn't? Is there a sense that this would set up then a mechanism that would cause Minscu to then not have them take remedial courses because of that? Or is this, you know what I mean, is it all, is the effect of this going to be after the test when they're in college, mm-hmm. or is the effect, purpose effect to be in the beginning to prepare them so they make it to school with all the things they need? You see what I'm asking the difference there?
Representative Bennett?
I think I do, and Mr. Chair, I believe what you're asking, I think I understand.
I can ask it again. I realize it kind of...
Okay.
Basically, I want to know is that... Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. I'm out of practice. I want to know, is the purpose of this bill so that at some point it gives the students the ability to avoid taking remedial courses, even if Minscu thinks they should take remedial courses, or is the purpose of this bill to set somebody up in eighth grade to take the test and then know that they're deficient so they can work on it so they're ready by the time they graduate, or both?
Mm-hmm. It would be both. I mean, the number one purpose of this bill is just to inform students and families and teachers more and earlier as to the readiness a student has. But we do have a component in the bill, just like with the ACTs. This would be no more restrictive than the student getting a score on the ACT and having that tell them what they are, whether they're prepared or not. And like I mentioned here, there is a component on page 6, I think it is, where it just like the ACTs, if a student meets or exceeds this whatever guideline scores that the that Minscu decides, they would not have to take remedial courses, just like that was in the higher ed bill last session for the ACTs. If they meet or exceed a particular score, then they won't have to take remedial courses in that particular subject.
Representative Isaacson?
Thank you. So the front part of that, to assess and help people get on track if they're gone, mm-hmm. they're not paying attention where they need to be successful, I like that idea. I don't know, I haven't vetted this enough to know if this is the way to measure that or not, but the idea of getting someone prepared if they're not on track is important. Mm-hmm. The back side of it, I'm a little concerned about, in that Chair Norris, maybe you can correct me, but isn't Minscu in the process, or weren't they in the process of putting together the assessment they needed to replace AccuPlacer, or is that...
I can't verify that 100%.
I can hold that question until they come up, but I mean, if there's already a process in place that's being used that's going to assess that, because if I remember right, and I'm a little foggy because I'm getting over a chest cold, but it was to replace AccuPlacer because it had some issues. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that inventing a third way of doing this when they have already their own way of doing it that's going to be better would make sense to me, or at least I perceive that. You know, so I'm a little suspect of this part, but maybe I'll save the second part of that for when Minscu testifies. So thank you, Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bennett, I had just a couple things. One is the MCAs are criterion reference tests, and they're meant to test whether the standards that we've selected in our state are being met by the MCA testing to see whether the students have learned what's being taught. Norm reference tests are a little different. They're normed across the country, and so I'm a little concerned that we're that it's an apples and oranges comparison here, that the MCAs really, do they align well with the norm reference tests or not? So that's part of my question. Is there a concern about using a criterion reference test rather than a norm reference test in college admission? Because we would then be applying a different standard to our in-state versus out-of-state students, and maybe that's okay. But that's one thought I had. And then the second one is, when is the MCA given for the last time for high school students?
Representative Bennett?
That's a good question in 10th or 11th grade, but I'm not positive on that.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett, if we have a score that's put in and a student tests in 10th or 11th grade and isn't to that score yet, how will they be tested again after they graduate to see whether they've actually reached this line that you're wanting to put in place? Because I'm completely sympathetic with the idea that too many kids are being forced to take remedial courses. And the data that I shared with this committee last year showed that many students who aren't forced to take remedial and are just put in a classroom actually do quite well. The vast majority of them pass the courses. So I'm sympathetic, but I'm a little worried that if the test is given in 11th grade and they still have time to learn, are you going to then offer that test again upon graduation in order to use whatever score the student has then reached by that time, because it's not given at graduation.
Right.
So those were just two issues that I had.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennett.
And just to make sure, I want to say again that this assessment is meant to be a companion to the ACT. It's not meant to replace it. Students very well will probably take that ACT. What we'd like to see here is allow the MCAs to be another source of information because it's given much earlier. And so I don't really see an issue there because chances are those students are going to take the ACT as well. We're just looking at another source here. Again, the MCAs are based upon our state standards, which are college-ready standards. And actually, from what I understand, the MCA assessments in many places are actually more rigorous than the ACT, or at least in certain areas. That's why we don't give the ACT in high school to test our standards. It can't, because our standards are more rigorous. We have areas, well, I won't get into that. But this is a companion. It's not looking as the only source. And I can't speak to how the high school works with the MCAs, but I believe students can take that assessment again, but I would have to check on that because I'm not positive how that works. So I'm just asking that the MCAs would be another source of information for students and parents, not the only source.
Representative Bernardi? Representative Norton, are you done?
Well, I guess, and maybe we can talk about this a little further, but if it isn't going to be used as a measurement that, unless you're saying the MCA score that's going to be used to guarantee kids not having to take remedial, if this is going to be the measurement, so you're adding another layer of complexity, another way to cordon kids off from. I think talk with some folks, and maybe after I hear Minsky, that'll help a little bit if they're going to comment on that. I guess I'm just concerned if it's not a measurement, adding something else to the ACT that you're saying now they would take in addition to it is, I don't know how this will be particularly helpful then, because you could still say if you've taken an ACT, kids get accepted into college based on ACT, but it doesn't really say whether they have to have remediation to the same degree you're talking about here. So I'm just not understanding how the two are delving together, I guess, if you're going to use both.
Mr. Chair, could I make a comment on that?
Bennett, sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add, I believe the strength of this bill is the first component, that we create these guideline scores to help inform students and families. The other part of the bill that we're utilizing the same component that was given to the ACTs, that's on page 6, where it says students who meet or exceed the MCA scores identified by Minsky do not need to take a remedial course in the same subject. I look at that as more a secondary part, that we're kind of treating it the same as the ACTs, and I personally don't have a problem with potentially removing that component out of this bill if that's a big issue for this committee. I really think that the important part is the guideline scores and giving parents and students and teachers more information and earlier. I'll just, say that for future.
Okay. Representative Bernardi.
Okay. Representative Bennett, I had a couple questions. It seems to me this is like adding more to government, and it seems almost like an unfunded mandate to Minsky. Is there a fiscal note to this?
I believe a fiscal note has been requested. As I mentioned earlier, I don't really foresee a fiscal cost to this. The data is already there. Correlations have already been made, as I stated in the name of that assessment. Getting Prepared Report 2015 that, you know, the data is already there. We're just asking MinSCU to fine-tune that data and name some guidelines so that students have their eyes open as they're working their way towards whatever path they want to take post-secondary. We're not asking them to recreate anything. Take current data and give their perspective on, and they can look at the correlation between students who have done well on that assessment, students who haven't, and give their perspective on what those guidelines should be.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you. Well, to me, that doesn't just happen. That takes staff time, and it takes people to do analysis. It does cost money. And so if we don't provide money for it, it seems like it is an unfunded mandate, and we're just growing more bureaucracy in the system. The other concern I have is that what we really want to do is have kids be successful for school. And we have you thought about providing money for getting kids prepared that might be kids that come from backgrounds that they have more disadvantaged opportunities, they're from lower incomes? Have you thought about adding something like that in your bill and focusing on the current things that we currently have in place that are measuring students for college? And then an additional question, with like the ACT, the additional question I have, how does this, what MinSCU already uses Accuplacer to find out if kids are, young people or students are prepared, not just young people, students in general, their ages are changing a lot. So how does that relate to your bill?
Representative Bennett.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Again, we're just looking at providing and empowering parents and students and families, teachers, with more information and earlier. The Accuplacer, the ACT, many times those come way too late. And for students of color and students in poverty and so on, we need a chance as educators earlier to work with them. I'm leaving this bill clean, but I have other bills I'm presenting to the K-12 committee that do involve, for example, with Minnesota Reading Corps, adding some early interventions to help get students on track for reading and essentially math, too. So that's, you know, a whole other subject.
So, Mr. Chair, just a clarifying question. When you were answering Representative Norton's question about when these are being taken in high school, did I understand that you didn't know when they were being taken in high school?
The
MCAs? Right.
Well, it's third grade, and then I know there's eighth grade, and I believe it's 10th grade, but that I would have to check on.
Thank you.
We do have four testifiers I'd like to get to today also. Representative Iwakim.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair. I was Representative Bennett. I was looking. I had to look up my son's records because I was trying to remember, too. We have one left in high school, and I know he started taking the MCAs in eighth grade, but for math, the final one was in 10th, and the reading was in 9th, and science was in 11th. And from what I can remember, and maybe we changed this, it used to be that you had the opportunity to take the math test up to three times, and if you still didn't pass it, you still graduated. And I have always understood as a parent that the MCAs were there to make sure that your child had a good high school education, was to our high school standards, and you could graduate. Not as much looking at it as a college-ready test. And I appreciate you wanting to get more information to the parents out early, but every time my sons or daughters took this test, we were always mailed the responses back, granted, usually 6 months after the fact. I think the MAP testing is a lot better indicator because it's immediate. But we were mailed all the information back to let her know where our kid fit in the school district, in the state, and on average. So that's a little bit of highlight on the MCAs. So while I understand the part of the bill that you're talking about wanting to make sure the parents are more informed, I think we're pretty informed already. So, and my understanding has always been that the MCAs were a graduation requirement, not a college readiness assessment. So, do you have any comments on that?
Senator Bennett?
I know there was a question buried in there somewhere. I'm so sorry. I'm out of practice as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Again, I will just say that the MCAs are much more powerful than I believe, you know, we give them credit for. And no, at this point, they don't give us information on college readiness because we've never had that looked at and named guideline scores. So the standards, our Minnesota state standards, are looking at readiness for post-secondary. So I personally see the MCAs as a perfect fit for this. And again, the data shows in those getting prepared report, that it shows a high correlation between the MCAs and college preparedness. So I don't see an issue, I guess, with utilizing this as another point of data. Again, it's not a cut score. We're not telling students you can or you can't go on to post-secondary. It's just helping students in the eighth grade or whatever grade they take this assessment to say, you know what, you've got a lot more work if you're planning on going to such and such or going into this field, or you're looking very prepared and ready to roll. So I just think the more information we can give families empowers them more.
Representative Isaacson, you have another question? Okay. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Evans, sit on the K-12 committee and then this committee here in the last 6 years. I think there's no secret that it's important that both our high schools and our universities do communicate to some point and certainly agree on helping students before they get into college, especially not having to do remedial courses. I had a bill last year that dealt with that, and I think we'll continue to talk about that. So I appreciate that component of your bill, Representative, and the fact that you'll open up that line of communication between our universities, Minsky, and high school. I think that's very important. I think we lack in that area of communication. But I do have a question regarding the bill on page 3, section 3.7 down to 3.13, where it states that the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, in consulting with the Commissioner, will identify the scores of the comprehensive assessments regarding math, reading, and writing when available. And in that particular, I'll end at that point. Don't we already have our counselors in school that would know what a test score on MCA would indicate and then what is needed to go on to either a post-secondary four-year or two-year, and or at that counselor who looks at the scores would know if they need additional work in reading, writing, or math? I see in your bill it specifically puts the two together, but don't our counselors already have that knowledge, or will this be something new?
Representative Bennett.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And the answer to that would be, I am guessing that any high school teacher that gives that assessment has a pretty good idea of what scores indicate whether a student's going to be prepared or not for post-secondary. We're just asking that that would get down on paper so that everybody has that knowledge and not just particular people, you know, certain counselors in the high school, but we want parents, students, and everybody to have that knowledge of what those guideline scores would be for general preparedness. That makes sense.
I'd like to move to the testifiers now, if we can. And this is Joshua?
Yeah, Crossan. Josh Crossan. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members
Welcome.
Of the committee. My name is Joshua Crossan, and I'm with MNCAN. MNCAN is an education advocacy nonprofit that works to improve public education for all kids, regardless of zip code, ethnicity, background, etc. I just want to clarify some questions that were out there before I start my testimony. So the MCA requirements are for every grade, third grade through eighth grade. You take the reading test in 10th grade, and you take the math test in 11th grade, and you take the science test sometime in high school. There's no longer a graduation requirement, Representative Joachim pointed to. There once was a graduation requirement, but now there is no longer a graduation requirement to pass the MCAs. And so two things that I've handed out to you. One is this document that kind of looks like someone took a picture of it on their iPhone and sent it over, which they did. And so basically what this piece of this document has is my cousin's Smarter Balanced ELA literacy exam. This is the test that they take in Washington State. Partly I'm showing you this document to gloat and that she got a perfect score on this exam. But the second part is if you look at grade level 4 or the level 4 of this, so if you score at a 2,668 to 2,769, anywhere in that field, it specifically says in there that the student is ready for English language arts and literacy, which is needed for entry level college. This is exactly what what we're talking about with this piece of legislation. Something as simple as a family report that lets you know that you are ready for college-bearing courses. So that's the first part of this legislation, just allowing families more access to the information that the MCAs provide. The second part is this graph that we put together, and this is regarding the second part of this piece of legislation, which allows us to understand if our K-12 kids are ready for college specifically. And if you look at remediation rates of the MCAs, kids who pass the MCAs for math, the remediation rate is 9%. Kids who pass the MCAs in reading in high school, 21%, compared to not proficient at 47 and 62. The state averages, this is a little out of date. The 2014 was at 28%. The remediation rate right now is at about 24%. So I asked some experts around this. I'm not a statistician, but I asked, is there a correlation then between the MCAs and college readiness? And the folks that I asked frankly said yes. Comparing this to the ACTs, if you pass the ACTs, the remediation rate for the ACT is at about a 26%. So where our remediation rate for a high school diploma in Minnesota is 24 and the remediation rate for the ACT is 26, that indicates that a high school diploma in Minnesota is actually more or correlated to college readiness than the ACTs are. Some things to also think about when we're talking about these, we're actually talking about real kids that are finding barriers to college. When kids take the MCAs, they're finding easier access or understanding to how they can approach college, whether they're taking them in third grade or 11th grade, compared to the ACTs, for example. To give you some numbers, African-American kids that take the MCAs in 11th grade math, about 23% of African-American kids are proficient in math. When African-American kids taking the ACT, 14% are proficient in math. Hispanic kids on the MCAs, 33% are proficient through the MCAs, 31% in math. Native American kids in science, 32% proficient in the MCAs, through the MCAs, 18% proficient in math, or the ACT. So when looking at this, we also have to ask the question, how many kids are actually passing the ACTs? With the ACT, black kids, for example, 5% of African-American kids are passing the ACT or getting college-level courses, where that number is about 20% for the MCAs. We see close alignment, correlation between the MCAs, again, with college readiness, and I really want to point out that there is a racial bias with specifically with the ACT. With that, I'll take any questions. It sounds...
Okay. I was going to hold the questions until after the testifiers are done, but we've got two who'd like to talk right now directly to Joshua, Representative Isaacson.
Hi there. Thank you for testifying today. I'm just caught part of what you said, so I'm literally just wanting you to repeat yourself so I understood you correctly.
Yeah.
When you said, I'm not a statistician, but I asked someone who was, you gave a stat on that. Yes. I didn't catch the stat at that point. What was it again?
I threw a lot of stats out there, specifically through the correlation between the MCAs and college readiness. So you basically this graph, kids who are proficient in math have a 9% remediation rate for a college level course in math, 21% in reading, remediation rate for the ACT is about at a 26%.
And so you would ask
ACT cut score.
Just so I'm clear, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Thank you. You would ask someone who knows stats to run the numbers and found a p-value that so that it was correlated.
I specifically asked about correlation, yes, and they said there is a stronger correlation between the MCA data and the ACT data.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Norton, you have a question?
Sorry.
Yeah, my question was specific to the ACT, and you know, I had five kids, and we got ACT scores for all those kids. I've never heard passing an ACT before, so I'm trying to understand what passing an ACT is and what a cut score is, because my kids ranged, you know, they had a 12-point range, I think, between all the kids, and so I'm just not understanding what you're talking about there. So if you could help me.
Yep.
Mr. Crossan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, the ACT on their website actually creates cut scores for every subject. There are four specific subject areas, reading, English, science, and math, and each cut score is different. The cut scores that the ACT create, based on those cut scores, is a 26% remediation rate. So on the ACT's website, they have specific cut scores for each grade on whether or not a kid is college ready.
All right. Thank you very much. Kenneth Eben is next. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Norris, members of the committee. My name is Kenneth Avon. I'm a program director for Students for Education Reform, and I'm actually here on behalf of Latasha Gandhi, who is our executive director. I just wanted to tell a little story to kind of put this bill in context. So when Tasha, this is Tasha's story. So when Tasha was in high school, she went to what was Arlington High School in St. Paul, which is now Washington Tech. But she had a very high GPA, and she led her class in by grade point average. I think she was close to being valedictorian. And she was taking AP classes, and she was taking a very rigorous curriculum. And then when she showed up to college, when she went to Inver Hills, she ended up having to take remedial courses because no one had ever told her that, like, what she was achieving in high school was not measuring up to college readiness. And so I know some of you know who we are, and we've been working on a bill around remediation for the last few years. And so this is part of the reason why we're also taking this up, because we want to make sure that students who are leaving college or leaving high school and entering college are ready. And if we can find better ways to support those students, we should be able to do that. So we are supportive of this bill today because we believe that providing more indicators on measuring college readiness and not just measuring progress towards graduation is key. And so I think the MCAs, which is something that is universally used across the state of Minnesota, is an opportunity for students to get more information. And as far as the second part of this bill, we are very supportive because we know that, one, the ACT, we have allowed this capability of students being able to pass by remedial courses if they get a certain score on the ACT is something that we use. And I think providing students with as many opportunities as possible to prove that they are college ready is something that we should really take seriously, because we know that this is a barrier to completing college, entering remedial courses. And so we would ask you to support this today because we know that we have a post-secondary attainment goal for the state of Minnesota, and we're not going to get there without trying to give students the opportunity to bypass and eliminate some of these barriers on the way to graduating from college.
Thank you very much. Representative Norton, do you have a question?
We've been talking about these issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. We've been talking about these issues for a couple years, and I'm sympathetic again with the, you know, the intent here. A lot of the colleges have moved toward co-requisites as a way to get around this. Are you supportive of, we pushed that a lot last year, and I think, you know, many of the colleges have been taking that to heart. Are you supportive of that effort?
Chair Norris, Representative Norton, we are very supportive of that. We actually have been calling for the state to use that, to require Minsky institutions universally to use co-requisite or supplemental instruction as a way to provide students with credit while taking or while getting some fundamental instruction along the way.
Thank you.
Members should know that this bill's path would be from here to the Education Innovation Policy Committee. Jim Bartholomew, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today in support of House File 2586. We believe Representative Bennett's bill will not only help encourage students to think about a post-secondary education, but they'll also be better prepared for the post-secondary education they aspire to. As you've heard, and according to the 2016 most recent Getting Prepared report, 26% of high school students who enroll in a Minnesota post-secondary institution within 2 years of graduation are required to take remedial courses in reading and or math. In real terms, this means nearly 8,500 students from the class of 2013 were required to spend $11.8 million to take remedial courses. And while the overall percentage of students needing remediation is down slightly to 26%, as you've heard, the percentage of low income and students of color taking remedial courses is going up. Beyond the time and money associated with taking remedial courses, there's the diminished likelihood that students will complete a post-secondary program. And our point in highlighting these numbers, numbers that you're already familiar with, is that we can do more earlier to help reduce the need for remediation. We can do this by helping students, families, and educators understand where students are relative to post-secondary readiness while they still have time to act in high school. The Department of Education has done a great job of including our post-secondary systems in helping to develop our K-12 academic standards and the MCAs. And with House File 2586, we can create an even stronger link between our education systems by asking MNSCU to identify specific guidelines for how well students should do on our standards in order to be ready. As you've heard, with this information, we'll have more time to help students catch up if necessary, or to encourage them to pursue accelerated courses through options like PSEO and concurrent enrollment. Thank you, and we'd ask that you support House File 2586.
Thank you. Any questions of Jim? All right. Thank you very much. We have another testifier, Haku Yang. I hope I pronounced that right. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and members. My name is Haku Yang, and I am System Director of P20 and College Readiness at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. First, we want to emphasize that we want to make this effort work for both K-12 and higher education, as we know that career and college readiness is important for the state of Minnesota. We look forward to working with Representative Bennett as the bill moves forward. However, we do have some feedback about using the Minnesota Comprehensive Exams, or the MCAs, to determine post-secondary course placement. As it has already been described for you, the MCAs are the statewide accountability tests that allow Minnesota to meet the federal requirements of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, now the Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA. The Minnesota Academic Standards and Benchmarks for a particular grade level describes the content that is to be mastered by students for that particular grade level. The MCAs help school districts measure how well they have aligned curriculum and instructed students to meet the Minnesota K-12 academic standards. While the Minnesota academic standards include components of career and college readiness standards, there are other assessments that are specifically designed to measure career and college readiness for post-secondary enrollment. There are two nationally recognized and administered exams that are designed to measure college readiness, the ACT and the SAT. In Minnesota, over 78% of high school students take the ACT. MNSCU not only uses the ACT or the SAT as one of the criteria for admission purposes at our state universities, but we also use ACT subject area test scores at all MNSCU colleges and universities to determine college-level course placement. When students have demonstrated specific subject area scores on the ACT, they are exempted from taking the ACCUPLACER, a course placement test, and are able to enroll in college-level courses. In other words, students are only required to take the ACCUPLACER for course placement if they have not taken the ACT or if they score below the college-level benchmarks on the ACT subject scores. In 2013, legislation was passed that required all 11th graders to take the ACT exam, and MNSCU was supportive of this effort. MNSCU testified in favor of this provision on several occasions. In 2015, this legislation was repealed, and the current law encourages 11th graders to take the exam. School districts are required to offer the exam at the high school upon request of the students. At the federal level, in the newly reauthorized ESSA, states may now choose to offer an assessment that is a nationally recognized exam at the high school level, such as the ACT or the SAT. A number of states have moved towards using the ACT or the SAT as their K-12 accountability state test in the high schools. Additionally, we feel decisions about course placement of students into developmental or college-level coursework is best made at the local college or university level based on multiple indicators after considering the course of action that best supports a student's success in college-level coursework. National research suggests that using more than one measure improves outcomes for students by more accurately placing them into the correct level of coursework from the beginning. Minsky would be supportive of using MCA scores as one of the multiple measures for course placement decisions. Lastly, the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Private Colleges, and other states may not accept MCA scores in place of ACT or SAT for college admissions or for course placement. Also, at least 20% of Minnesota high school graduates leave the state for post-secondary education. A college-ready cut score on the a college-ready guideline on the MCAs will have little or no currency in out-of-state admission offices. Overall, Minsky supports the spirit of providing information to students, families, and teachers for student preparation towards career and college readiness. We look forward to working with Representative Bennett regarding our feedback on the on using MCA test scores as a single determinant to place students into college-level courses. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Isaacson, you still have a question?
Yes. This one, Mr. Chair, is for Representative Bennett, and that it will come back to PACU.
Okay, that's fine. If you could just wait there. Okay.
Is there a part of the bill, and I was looking it over, so I'm not sure, that would narrow this down and say that Minsky would be bound, or it's binding, that the scores that they say as guidelines would then allow a student to not have to go into remedial regardless of what Minsky thinks? I mean, is that the bill prescribed that specifically?
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, there is a component on page 6 that would treat the guidelines that Minsky comes up with similarly to the ACT, that would, if a student scored at or above a particular level, that they would be allowed to not take remediation courses. Again, I want to point out the strengths of this bill, and in the other part of this is that giving students and parents more information earlier, not replacing the ACT by any means. I don't think there should be a battle between the ACT and the MCAs at all, and I'm looking forward to talking with Minsky more on this too. Just giving students and parents and teachers more information earlier, utilizing assessment that our students already take, not giving additional assessments at all, just utilizing what they already take. So I'm willing to work with them on that component that seems to be an issue here about the remediation courses. I'm definitely willing to work with Minsky on that.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. And so I think that, you know, the intent of what you're trying to accomplish, I'm probably on the same page with you on. I'm a little skeptical that the MCAs will provide the support you wanted to provide when the results come back so late, and they could even be outdated by the time the parent gets them. I'm skeptical that it's going to result in what you're asking for, even though I don't disagree at the beginning of your bill of what you're asking for, right? Mm-hmm. I just don't think this is the way that's going to get it done. I would have be really hard-pressed to be in a situation where up here we're going to be very specific and prescribe to Minsky exactly how they're going to start deciding who takes what courses in their colleges. I think that's just bad legislation. It's a bad idea. And the concept is we're really concerned about something over here, and that is the fact that we have kids coming out of high school that aren't ready for college. Our remedy isn't then to go tell Minsky how they're going to decide who's ready and who's not. Our remedy is to go and make sure our K-12 is producing college-ready people. And so for me, this part doesn't ring true at all, and it would be an absolute deal-breaker for me to be able to vote for it. If that part was removed, I'd be very excited to see how you guys collaborated and came up with a solution that provided for multiple modes of determining and getting information to parents at whatever age is necessary. I think that's a really good thing, right? So I think you're on the right track, but that last part, I think we're definitely weighing out of our water there, and that would be a very bad thing for us to try to legislate such a specific thing that schools are so engaged in managing, and that they do a good job of, and working their butt off to make sure we do a better job in that. So I'm really uncomfortable with that part, but the rest I get. Thank you.
To that point, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just directly to that point, Representative Isaacson, you know, I've had a couple kids go through school as well and watch the MCAs, and one component that we haven't talked about at all is the Lexel reading score, which is incredibly important, and it's very precise. The reason I know so much about it is because I had a third grader that was functionally illiterate by the fourth grade, and so I pulled him out of the public school system. Not that there's anything wrong with the public school system, but for him it was a good choice. And he went from, I don't remember his initial score, but by the time he went back to his high school in ninth grade, he was reading at a college senior level. So all that was contained within him, but the reason I was able to do that is because I had that information, and the MCAs provided that information in part with the Lexel's reading score. And that was a track. I mean, he also took the MAP test, too, which I know we were kind of discussing in the corner here, which it's also a very good measure as well. But I think it's important to understand that that component alone is gold, that the Lexel reading score is just gold. I mean, you can look at that and say, yep, he's reading at the third grade level, fourth grade level, fifth grade, sixth grade, 12th grade, college. It's really a great measure. So I think, you know, I know we have some trepidation, you have some trepidation here, but you also have to realize how incredibly powerful that one component of it is as we move forward. And, of course, we want to make sure that we have the students have less debt, not more, and so we're all looking at preparing them. And I'm just telling you from a parent who actually took the initiative that I enrolled both of my kids actually in an online virtual school so that we had really intense intervention in their lives, and now they're amazing. Like I said, my daughter is at the U of M Carlson School of Business now, so doing very, very well. My son's going to be going to St. Cloud State very soon for biotechnology. So more information for me is important. And to Representative Joachim, did I say that right? Okay. Sorry. We're all tired. It's been a long day, and it's warm in here. You know, I didn't feel like on the math side, I really knew for sure what those numbers meant, and I think anything that we can do to give parents a little bit more information is helpful. And you know, from someone that actually brought my kids home and enrolled them in an online school for 6 years, was in the trenches with them. Are the MCAs perfect? No. Are the MAP tests perfect? No. But at least it gives us a little bit better measure, and the Lexel reading score is amazing. So, just to put that out there for you, too.
Representative Isaacson, quick.
Yes, thank you. Sir, I just want to be really clear about this. In terms of them collaborating, coming up with a way to make sure that our students have the information they need as fast as they can to respond, to allow you to parent the way you did, is exactly the outcome, right? This bill has a big chunk of that, and then the small part that might be in some people's mind is significant is actually super, super significant in terms of the precedent it sets, that we're going to dictate that kind of prescribe, that kind of specificity to the way in which Minsky is going to operate its business like that. That just isn't a very good standard to set. It's not a good precedent to set. And I want to be clear that that last part of it is really poisonous to what is otherwise, I think, a very well-intended bill that has the potential to do a lot of good. But that last part is absolutely unacceptable, because that kind of prescription is dangerous for us to do in anybody's business like that, not just Minsky. And so I think there's that hopefully will get worked out as we move forward. But I want to be clear that I'm not opposing what you're saying. It's the last part that I think has got some very serious problems and ramifications. Thank you.
I think that's clear. Representative Norton, you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I agree, and I'm not going to make a motion, though I'm tempted to, but I'm going to say, and I told this to the business partnership when they came to my office yesterday, I think Section 2 is premature, and I think it's problematic, and I'd be fine with the rest of it, and I'd at least, you know, so my request is that you consider removing Section 2 for now. You can come back another year, and if the results are useful and you work with Minsky, I would suggest adding it then. I would say I still have a concern, I think the bill doesn't go far enough to get to what you want, and that concern is with the 10th with the scores, the reading and math being in 10th and 11th grade. I'm not sure it's reasonable for a score to be given to a student and expect them to reach it in 10th and 11th grade when they still have 2 or 3 years of school left unless you're planning on giving this test again so that they can see if they've made that benchmark in order for it to be useful as part of the process that you're talking about at the college level. So there's, I'm not saying it can't be done. I think it could be done, but I think there's work to do before, and again, it gets to that section too. And then I did have just one question quickly. Currently, if a student comes to a college and let's say their ACT is, they got a 13 and the school's like, I'm concerned about that, I'm not sure you'll make it, I'm going to suggest you take a remedial course. Does the college require it? Can a student say, I don't want that, I think I can do it, will you give me a chance? How much flexibility is there for students?
Ms. Yang?
Chair Norton, Representative Norton, right now we do require students to take developmental education in a case like that with an ACT score of 13. When students are much closer, so let's say right now we have a cut score of a benchmark of the ACT of a writing in 18, and let's say a student comes in with other factors that we can take a look at, that's where we can make an individual decision. But a score that's that low, I think we really do see that the student needs developmental education courses, and so we do not have a provision where they can opt to not take developmental education right now. Thank you.
Representative Lean, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, Rominski, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get your name.
Kaku Yang.
Yang.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Yang. I'm just wondering what the rates of incidents are where people have met those scores, those ACT scores, but are still having to take remedial courses, still mandated by Minsky to have to take those remedial courses.
Ms. Yang?
Chair Nornes, Representative Lee. So right now, Minsky has adopted scores of 18 in writing, 21 in reading, and 22 in math. So if you come to any of our Minsky colleges and universities with scores, with those scores or higher, you are not required to take developmental education courses. Now, can I guarantee that that doesn't ever happen 100% of the time? I can't speak to that, but I would say that for the most part, if you come in with those scores and higher, that you are not taking developmental education courses. It's when your scores are lower than that, that we then use the ACCUPLACER, and if you score college level using the ACCUPLACER test, then you are placed in college level courses, but if you score in developmental levels, then that's where you're placed into developmental courses.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and was this put into place before, was this in place before the legislature acted last year to mandate the ACT college ready scores?
Yang.
Chair Nornes, Representative Lean, yes, MinSCU has had this in effect for a few years now, before the legislation that came last 2015.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Yang, have you seen those rates of incidents where students have met those scores but are still having to take those classes? Have you seen that come down at all?
Ms. Yang?
Chair Nornes, Representative Lean, I do not have that information, but I, now that you brought it up, I know that it's very important for us to make sure that that does not happen. And so when I get back to the office, I will make sure that I reach out to all of our campuses to ensure that students are not being placed into developmental courses if they've met those ACT benchmarks and higher. I would say that that doesn't happen, but, I can't guarantee every single, we serve 450,000 students, and so I can't guarantee that every situation is like that, but I'm pretty sure that's 99.9%, if not 100.
Thank you very much. Representative Lean, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more comment, and I'll completely reserve judgment on this, because I would like to see that information. I think it'd be beneficial for the committee to take a look at that and to see what improvements Minsky has been making since, that has gone into place. But, I think overall this bill is, misguided. I don't really think it adds to the quality of education. I don't really think it improves people's ability to not only get into college, but to get into the workforce. I don't see where there's just no connect in my mind on how this is going to overall help our overall economy. On the other side of it, I'm thinking too, let's say a student goes in, takes their MCA test in high school at 10th grade or whatever it may be, gets a score that's deficient to get into college, and you know, what sorts of supports are there going to be available to help that student, to help that family? I understand it's more information for that student to know what they have to do, but how are we going to help that student get into college and ultimately become a become a productive member of the workforce? So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennett, do you have any final closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to committee members. And I do appreciate all of the input that I've received, and I will definitely look forward to working with MNSCU to make this bill, you know, what's best for our students, our families, and our schools, our colleges, both. So I will look forward to working with that. And just to add that assessment information is the first most powerful point that a teacher can utilize, or a parent or a student, to help them know whether they're ready or not. Whether it's a student going from third grade to fourth grade, am I ready for fourth grade, or is it ready, or is an eighth grader who's looking forward to post-secondary? I believe that this will put more power into the hands of parents, students, and teachers. I am fully confident the MCAs can deliver on this. I'm really excited that they have gone online now. That's just brand new, so parents and students don't have to wait 6 months, nor do teachers. They can get that information immediately the same day with the new online component. So I will definitely look forward to working with MNSCU, and I'm open to further input after the fact from anybody here, too. So thank you again.
Thank you. Chair will renew the motion that House File 2568 pass and be referred to the Education Innovation Policy Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Bill moves on. And with that, members, we are adjourned.